you live in the US, you can pay almost all of your household bills with crypto. Everything from your credit card bill to your utility bill to your mortgage to insurances, local taxes, student debt, you name it. Yeah, it plugs a big hole for being able to live on crypto, which is what we do.
I live unbanked off of cryptocurrency, and I use Bitrefill extensively because it lets me pay with crypto at places that don't yet accept it directly. This one service, more than any other, helps me live on crypto, pay your prepaid phone bill, or buy gift cards to thousands of major retailers around the world, all with cryptocurrency, including for exact amounts so you don't have to buy more gift credit than you need for a specific purchase. You can use Bitrefill without an account, but if you get an account, you can earn rewards points, which translate to savings, and you can also hold a balance denominated in dollars or euros to protect yourself against market crashes. Go to bitrefill.com, click Create Account, and enter the referral code DCN, or follow the link in the description. Hey everyone, I have the wonderful pleasure of once again speaking with the one and only Sergey Kotlier. How's it going, man?
It's good. Always a pleasure, Joel.
Yeah, so the reason I reached out, other than I just like talking to you, is recently your company Bitrefill started offering something that I'd been asking about for a long time, and I'm sure I was not the only one, which is a bill pay solution. So do you want to just really quick give a rundown of this new feature that got released?
Yeah, sure. Basically, if you live in the US, you can pay almost all of your household bills with crypto. You know, everything from your credit card bill to your utility bill to your mortgage to insurances, local taxes, student debt, you name it, sort of. So it's a you know, similar bill payment experience that you would have in certain other banks and or apps, or even if you have like a cash based solution. So it's the same. We plug into the same infrastructure and put the bill through. Yeah, it can take a couple of days for it to really hit. Yeah, but other than that, you can, if you go on Bitrefill from the US and sign up. There's currently a little wait list, but we're working through it as fast as we can. Yeah, it plugs a big hole for being able to live on crypto, which is what we do. Yeah, we post that in big red letters on the website.
Yeah, of course. I was actually speaking with Brian Harrington a few weeks ago about this very subject, and basically about living on crypto. It's possible. It's definitely possible in a lot of places in the world right now. But as far as you can live like unbanked, like no KYC on crypto, like 90%. And for like the last 10%, you either usually have to rely on someone else, like you might rent a property from someone who pays the utility bills, and then so they handle that part, or you might live with someone who does that or something like that. And so this is that last 10%. Which, you know, in the US, unfortunately, it is a KYC kind of a thing. So that's the thing. So one thing that's been like kind of like the Bitrefill ethos for a long time has been, you know, no identity, no KYC, only account if you want one for like rewards and things like that. And so unfortunately, I would say I'm not going to get too beat up about it because it's just a fact of life. But with the bill pay thing, you do have to provide like an ID and like proof that you live where you live or something like that. So is that a U.S. only requirement, or is it pretty standard when you pay those sorts of bills in other places in the world, as far as you know?
That's a good question. I mean, the U.S. is only our number two country that we've rolled this out in yet. In El Salvador, our understanding is that you can up to a certain limit and given that bills there are lower in amounts, most people get by just fine below those limits. In the US, the situation is different, and we're doing this service in partnership with a regulated financial institution. We need to comply with the law, and so that's what we do. And so there is a for this offering, you need to have an account, and you need to verify that account with your ID and the proof of residence that you actually live in the US of A.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this has been a big blind spot specifically for the US, and I have a feeling the financial laws were something like that. I do remember there were a couple of bill pay services, but they always went away. They always ran into problems and went away. Then there was one that was I was a big fan of called Lamium that lets you, it was kind of like Purse.io, but for bills, where you could pay someone else's bill and do that. And then that got basically shut down. It ended up being rolled into some other service, but they had some nasty meetings with regulators over that stuff because people were allegedly, misusing that service. And so the US was always that. I know in Canada, there's a few bill pay with crypto services. A friend of mine, Scott Cunningham, I think you know him. He checked out, I forget which one of those, but he said he was able to pay with no KYC for his bills there. And I know there's some places in Europe that allowed similar things, but I know a lot of European bill pay things that need verified users as well. So it's kind of like the US was that dark spot. And the US is kind of a dark spot for financial regulation on a lot of things.
Yeah, in some ways. I mean, there's plenty of countries that are similar, I would say. But yeah, definitely US is one of the stricter. And I guess, as a company, if you follow the American regulations, then you should be sure that you follow most of the other ones as well. Mm-hmm. I'm also not personally a fan of KYC because I've seen all of the bad things that can happen when these things go bad and data leaks and all of that stuff. But it is what it is, right? And we're a company, and we can't. There's no way that we could be doing anything else in this case.
Yeah, it's so. Why was the U.S. picked as the one after El Salvador? Was it just because it's a big market with lots of demand, or were there other reasons?
Yeah, it's our biggest market, it's different with different countries how these types of things work, in Europe it's not usually exactly like that for how bill payments work, and it kind of was natural to the US, and we found a way to get that done. And the sort of user experience is generally similar to what we're used to at Bitrefill. It's basically the same as a phone refill, just a little bit more data. But you type in your stuff in a form. We try to do a little bit of nice UX stuff, but you basically type in the details and then you pay. And then it goes out. We did this first in El Salvador, working with a local company there to do this. But the user experience is very similar. It's just that there's a lot more bills that you can pay in the US. It's a bigger country. There's all kinds of states and stuff and counties and local things and so on. And more of everything.
Yeah, so what was demand like for this to begin with? Because I know I've been talking about this for a long time, because I've been doing the Living on Crypto thing for a while, and it's always been, whenever people ask me, like, how do you pay your bills? Depending on which, like, year or month they ask, it's a different answer, because it's been such a changing landscape and stuff. So obviously, there's people like me who are asking, but is it a widely requested feature for a long time?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we are a niche. Bitrefill and Living on Crypto is still a small subset of the crypto community, however you slice the definition of crypto community. It doesn't even have to be that binary. I mean, you clearly seem to be an absolutist with this stuff, and Brian Harrington as well. Yeah, but for a lot of people, I think more is more, right? And so the more you can do, the better, and then gradually it fills the gaps, right? And the way that we see this stuff is that, in the olden days there were the traditional banks, and then came the challenger banks, the Cash Apps and the Revoluts and whatnot, and we're trying to make the last step to no bank. Yeah. And let people cut the cord to those things, and it doesn't have to be that binary, just being able to, the more you can live on crypto. I mean, that was from day one, I think, of Bitrefill, was the idea that, I mean, what kind of a shit currency is it that we have here if people can't buy stuff with it, right?
Yeah, of course.
And then, like, the continuation of that is, if people can be confident that there will be things that I can buy with this, then that confidence will also lead to them being confident with receiving payments in that currency as well, and starting to think of it as money, which is a pretty big behavioral change, I would say. And it's not even, again, it's not even natural in the crypto space for everybody. To think of it like that. Many people just see their coins as an investment.
Yeah, and I do know a lot of people. Like, for me, it's very natural to use crypto. For some people, there's a lot of people who, like, I find this a lot, especially in like the Bitcoin Cash community, seem to be like almost everyone has a phone wallet and knows how to use it for like the occasional time that they do. But you know, everything else is still like the banking system, and it's hard to get. You know, it takes a little bit of practice to get off of that whole thing. I know plenty of people, for example, who use something like the crypto.com card, that they have their money in crypto, but then it's still in a custodial banking platform that they swipe it. And it's kind of worth noting because we're talking about, you know, evils and like the bad things. Even though you do have to KYC to pay bills with this thing, you don't have to give up custody of your funds at all. You just hold on to it, and then so your money isn't KYC, even if that payment itself might be. And that might be like an important distinction of like, you know, not having control of your money up until the absolute end, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, and even beyond that, you are, you don't need to involve your bank, I guess, in your crypto stuff. Yeah, which I know has caused trouble for people in the US and all over the world, really, for whatever arbitrary reasons. I mean, once you learn how these things actually work in their systems, it ends up being, beyond hilarious. And then it's unfortunate that people get caught, and it's usually those who have done nothing wrong that get caught.
Of course. Do you have a plan to roll this out into other countries beyond just US and El Salvador?
Of course. I mean, we're a global first company, so
Of course.
stay tuned, I would say. But we're still learning. I mean, El Salvador is special in 100 ways, and we're learning there as well. The US is also special, and we need to figure out a lot of things, how to get it to work optimally. And we're still in this open beta with the wait list, looking for feedback on all of the things. And then comes all of the other challenges. How do we market it? How do we promote it? How do we get people to feel excited about using this thing? Which is not trivial, in this space. People sometimes just assume that if you build it, they will come. But
Oh yeah,
there's
they
more
will
to
not.
it than that. Some do. Some do. But I think a big realization for me over the past couple of years is that there are people that kind of use crypto because they have to use crypto, or that they're like in this I must find something. And I guess there's people like you who maybe don't have to, but just very, very strongly want to. Yeah, right. But for the vast majority, it's a choice. it's a preference and a statement and so on, and that puts requirements on the services, right? That it needs to be slick, it needs to be feel good, it needs to be like, okay, I'm living in the future today, and that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, that's one of those things that I think a lot of complexity might be one thing that people get tripped up on with crypto. Like new people, they're just starting to understand what it is. They know how to go to Robinhood and buy some Dogecoin, and that's like kind of it. And you're talking about keys in custody, and then you're copy and pasting addresses, and then they're like, wait, well, is it here? Oh, how do I do this? Did this happen right? Like it starts to become very, you know, kind of complicated. And especially with the crypto payment space, it's kind of a mess sometimes, you know, like the interoperability, yeah. You know, everything.
Of course. I mean, that's why it's also part of the chicken and egg problem, right? That there's all of these different things and they're not always interoperable. And I mean, we spend so much effort making sure that, you know, the payment methods that we have work and that they work with all of the different wallets and so on. And now we've gotten to the point where, hey, we want it to work in the cool new way with the wallets that support that, make sure that it works with the boring old way for the wallets that don't support the cool new way, and so on. And that's a lot of work. And that also means that it's difficult, you know, for companies that don't specialize on this I'll accept Lightning only. Okay, that's great, but then you still don't have stablecoin people, you don't have the altcoin people and so on, and so you need to or even all of the Bitcoin exchanges that don't have Lightning and all of the different wallets, and there's always this thing, and I think it's going to go on for a while longer. At the same time, it's good that there is creativity and problem solving, and sometimes things pop up in one of these realms that turn out to be successful, and then they spread. I think that that's more important given the sort of early adopter phase of people living in crypto. I think it's more important that there is a wide variety of things so that the things that work can bubble up, and then it is to, you know, land on one and push it onto the world.
Yeah. So how has the state of crypto adoption been from your perspective the last couple of years? Like, what have you seen many trends? Like, are people trying to do this more? Because I remember there was a time when it was a little complicated because that was right in the middle of the don't spend, just HODL phase, where people kind of like, a lot of people didn't even want to spend it. And I feel like Lightning, a lot has changed, you know?
So in some ways, I mean, you have to be mindful that the people that hang out on Bitcoin Twitter do not represent all of the people that use Bitcoin. It overlaps a little bit, but much less. Than what people think, you know, like most people think that, hey, I have my, 300 people that I follow on Twitter, and these are the Bitrefill users. And the reality is that, no, you know, some of them, you know, maybe 20, 30 of them are going to be, and many of them are not. And many other people that you don't even have a Twitter are Bitrefill users. And I mean, once you think about it, it kind of makes sense, because this, I mean, this crypto thing, there is both this movement idealistic aspect of it, right? Yeah. And that is the thing that brings people to Twitter and to all of the different forums and whatnot, that you become, I identify as a Bitcoiner, right? I mean, identify is a keyword, like it's part of who I am, right? Whereas there's also people who use crypto as a tool. It does the thing that I wanted to do, and then I'm done, and I don't particularly love it or care about it, and I'm not going to have arguments with randos on the internet over different things, right? Yeah, I always bring up the BitTorrent example, like, hey, if you want to download a Linux distribution or something else that's very legal, You just type in BitTorrent client into Google, and then you get the first one, right?
Yeah.
Or someone that looks sort of legit, I don't know, and it probably is going to work, and then you don't even know if it's the best one, and you don't know about all the dramas in the BitTorrent community, and I'm sure that they disagree about technical things, and blah, 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 right? And that's kind of the difference between the identity aspect and just using something as a tool, and they don't always overlap, and so if people want hey, if people don't have so much Bitcoin and they would like to have more, and they're stacking sats, well, then it doesn't make sense to spend their Bitcoin. That's fine. You don't have to come to us. One day when you'll be ready, you will. Yeah, and that's fine. You know, I'm not trying to sort of. Well, I guess some people are, maybe you are trying to push people into that. I'm just focused on presenting the option and doing that as good as I can, but. Hey, there's obviously going to be a lot of people who are not interested in something like this, that's completely fine. You know, we can still be friends and hang out and drink beers and meet at conferences and whatever. That's all good, right? I mean, that's kind of how I see this.
Yeah, I kind of maybe I'm not always the nicest person, but I tend to find people who. If people are just interested as an investment, you know, that's fine. If people are interested in it as a supplanting of fiat, a way to get rid of fiat, but they won't go away from fiat themselves, I do tend to poke at them just a little bit. Like, you know, hey, you say you want fiat to go away. Here's an option, and you don't want to do it. So maybe you should either change what you say, or obviously people can be full of shit if they want to. That's their right, right? But that, I will probably say something about it when there is someone. And one thing I do notice, though, there's a lot of influencers, if that's even a real word, right, who like to talk about this kind of thing, the end of fiat and all that kind of stuff. And every time they say something about that, and then I ask them about, you know, kind of more details, usually they make some kind of like, well, I'm working towards it or some kind of thing, but their followers always come in and are like, really, how do I do this? And I say, hey, BitRefill, go over, try it out, you know? But it's people, it's funny because a lot of times the only people there's a lot of loud voices, right? And a lot of people that follow the loud voices, but the people who follow the loud voices seem to be much more receptive to actually using crypto than the loud voices themselves.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's an interesting take. I haven't heard of that. I guess I tend to stay away from Twitter fights, but maybe I'll check in of who you're fencing with.
Yeah, it does. It's interesting to see how the narrative, though, has kind of changed amongst, and obviously we're talking about the Twitter world is very different from the world, like the actual world. But the Twitter world has become a little bit more like, I think El Salvador changed a lot of things.
Yeah.
Where people now started to, in their minds, they're like, oh, this is now we can not just talk about holding. Now we can talk about you not having to touch fiat at all.
Yeah, I agree. El Salvador has been huge for the Twitter Bitcoin community and I agree. It was on the way towards a split, and even probably even bigger split than the Bitcoin Cash split. And I was super worried, and I still somewhat worry about that. But these things also, I think that Strike and Jack Mallers are doing a tremendous job of unifying these things to sort of, make people aware that there isn't really a dichotomy between holding Bitcoin and spending Bitcoin. And a Bitcoin that you can't send around freely, it ceases to be interesting, right? I mean, sort of like if you go back to the basics, sort of like day one of learning about Bitcoin, I mean, okay, it's digital gold, but it's digital gold that you can send over the internet. right? If you can't send it over the internet, then what the fuck? Yeah, right. And so, but enabled to do that, there needs to be things that you can send it to, right? And things that you can buy and all of that stuff. And so I've always sort of been like, I mean, there is no contradiction here. It's sort of like, you know, people arguing about the chicken and egg and sort of like, hey, the chickens are more important. No, the eggs are more important.
Yeah, of course.
And at the end of the day, it's just two sides of the same coin, really. Yeah.
Well, speaking of two sides of the same coin, how have you seen the development of Lightning in the last couple years? I mean, it's obviously been growing. Is it more than you expected? Is it less than you expected? Is there kind of like surprising ways in which it's developed?
That's a good question. Look, I'm an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. I'm a hopeless optimist, especially with time.
Of course.
My expectation publicly was that within a year, 25% of Bitcoin transactions would happen on Lightning. Internally, I said 50. In practice, it was much less. Mm-hmm. So obviously, based on that, I have to say that I had expected a faster uptake. At the same time, it is growing exponentially from originally low levels, but we are in an industry where new tech is sort of hilariously slow to be implemented and adopted. So, you know, often when things are at an exponential growth curve and they're not at the top and not at the bottom, you can make a very excellent case that, you know, it's insanely great because look mm-hmm. at how it's been growing. And you can also make an excellent case like, but it's still small, right? And both of these are true. So that's kind of where we are with Lightning today. I think there's a lot of interesting developments. I mean, I think I'm starting to think that we may have gone a little bit too far with centralized services in the Lightning world. Yeah, I've previously been of the view that, hey, you know, whatever works, let's get people to use this thing, and people are using centralized things anyway, and so on. Mm-hmm. And I think that was right at the time. Now I'm starting to see a little bit of tendencies of large entities that control a big chunk of the activity starting to act in non-interoperable ways, let's say. And I've come to the understanding from like past pre-Bitcoin stuff that, I mean, it's the same if you remember people being upset about Internet Explorer and not following mm-hmm. web standards, right? I think there is like a natural law that like once you reach 40% or so market share, you start to get incentives to not be interoperable with mm-hmm. the open standards because you start to want to keep people in your own little ecosystem. And so I think that it was and is great that centralized entities have gotten onto Lightning. I think now is the time to push a little bit more for distributing it across multiple services, encourage self-custody, and push for open standards and interoperability and all of these things that are actually super important for this thing to be successful.
Do you think a lot of the way that the growth has been is also influenced by the fact that fees have gone way down on the main chain, so that now before people were paying $5, $10, $15, $20 for a fee, and they're like, well, we need a solution. And then when they're paying 10 cents for a fee now, they just like don't want to mess with Lightning.
No, I don't think so. That's not my view. I think that people that use cryptocurrency in practice care a lot less about fees than what people think. I think that I don't think that fees is the main selling point for Lightning, to be honest. I think that user experience is a bigger selling point for Lightning. I mean, there's still a whole bunch of people using Ethereum or stable coins on Ethereum,
Blows my
paying
mind.
humongous fees to Bitrefill. Yeah, but you know, I think you also need to be aware that fees, I mean, blockchains don't scale, right? We know that. And so as a result, fees rise when a lot of people are using a thing, right? When more people are using it than it has capacity for, and then there's the bidding war and fees rise up until people start complaining and use something else. But that means that kind of like there's a reverse logic, like fees are high because people are using the thing, right? And so, I mean, it's important to drive fees down. Don't get me wrong, I'm all about that as well. But it's not, I think, the case for the typical crypto user to worry all that much about fees. Maybe it's different, I guess, also if all of your transactions are always in crypto, then maybe you start caring. But for many people, I mean, even like I've spent a lot of time looking at what's going on in the mempool and on the blockchain and what kind of transactions people are doing. And like most Bitcoin transactions are coming from shitcoin exchanges, right? And so it is what it is, I think. But it is also so, I think that many people still see it as a speculative asset that goes up and down in value. And well, you know, when your net worth moves 5 figures in a day, then you know, 20 bucks here and there, whatever. Fees are more important in the sense, I think, that people don't want to feel like they're being taken advantage of, or sort of like this is unfair, right? That is sort of the big thing about fees. And it's not about the number, it's about the sentiment that I think is bigger than the actual fees.
Could be a percentage too, because like I've noticed with, so I have like a little bit of Ethereum and I haven't touched it in years because I just like literally years because I can't have some tokens and stuff. I can't do anything with it where they all self-destruct with fees because I'm at that level, the small level. But then I see people paying like $800 to like a Uniswap transaction, and I'm just like, I think that's insane. But then I see the amount that they traded. And they probably made a lot of money staking or providing liquidity somewhere. Or, and then it makes sense to that. Like people will pay for expensive things if it's worth it. And I think that's also about the fee. Fees, keeping fees low, I think is a good thing. I've also kind of come around to seeing total fee revenue being high as a good goal. Because one thing people don't really, the crypto world likes to talk about, they like to talk a lot of shit about inflation. But then there's a lot of, and most of crypto is running on inflation right now. Like there'd be no security, no anything without the inflation. And there's only a few networks that generate anything meaningful as far as total fees over the course of a day, you know? So it's gonna be
Well,
interesting to see.
there's also sort of this sort of potential energy factor here, I think, in the sense that, I mean, we know that people are willing to pay a lot of money for on-chain Bitcoin transactions. It happens every once in a while, and the fees spike all the way up. At the same time, maybe we don't need to pay those costs for security, because currently there is not really a need for security in that sense. I mean, I think that the rise of all of the altcoins is a testament to the fact that, I mean, Bitcoin was built to withstand a nation state level attack, right? That's the security model. Okay, but when you don't have a nation state level attack, then paying those fees becomes excessive. Right, and you can launch things that are less secure. You know, it can be a lot less secure than Bitcoin, but still secure enough, you know, to use on a day to day. I mean, most altcoins is just that. You just make trade-offs on these things, and I think it's very clear right now in the Ethereum EV IBM world, right, where you have all of these new layer ones, right, and they're just, I mean, they're just big block Ethereum in a lot of ways. So they decided that, you know, Ethereum security model is like, it's too expensive, we need less security, okay? And people use it, right? So I'm not so concerned about this how are we gonna pay for mining issue, because I think such a development will happen gradually. And I mean, if it comes to the, like, if it comes to massive nation state level attack with censorship and empty blocks or what have you, that's going to be so disruptive anyway, that, you know, it's going to involve a lot of, okay, we got to figure this out. So I'm not that worried right now for the whole security challenge thing. I guess it also depends on like what kind of things you're thinking about securing against, obviously.
Yeah, naturally. Now, with the rise of the, I would say, like the casino coins type thing, where there was always a bunch of cryptos.
Are there non-casino coins?
That's the real question. The answer is kind of no, you know? But in the beginning, there was always, I don't know, maybe just like the old-timer perspective, but there seemed to be a little bit more of an attempt to hide the fact that something was a complete shitcoin, you know? And then now gradually, like, Dogecoin became a joke. And after Dogecoin became very successful off of its joke potential, then you saw, and that combined with like the Uniswap era of like all these little like food tokens and things, everything, there was definitely a casino era from like the Game Stonks episode with like Robin Hood with the stocks and then with the Dogecoin and all this stuff. Have you seen a lot of that money flow into the spending ecosystem, or does it just seem to be stay in the casino?
Absolutely, some of it does. I mean, our Dogecoin volumes went way up, and I mean, our Ethereum stablecoin volumes are to some extent that people are doing DeFi stuff, you know, they bought an NFT and it went up and so on, and now they have some coins to spend. I mean, that's you know, the perspective that we look at people is people who have coins to spend. Okay, what are different ways to become someone who has coins to spend? Well, you can get paid, you can have bought it 10 years ago, you could be trading, you could be doing all kinds of different things, right? So absolutely, that those things are a factor. I think, I mean, like, frankly, I think, I mean, you're old enough in the space to remember the talk about the killer app, right? People were, it was popular to talk about, well, what's going to be the killer app? Well, we know what the killer app is. The killer app is the casino. That is what brings people to crypto. I'm not sure how I feel about that, to be honest, you know, because we came for the freedom. But as it is with many other things, the first thing that people do with freedom is this kind of things. And that also brings us back to the fees, right? Because again, like, say you're in Las Vegas, and you need to decide which of the casinos you're going to go to. Are you going to go to the one that has the highest, you know, whatever payback percentage? No, you're going to go to the one that looks cool and whatever, and it's going to
whatever
be an experience.
Makes you the money.
You know that it's a losing game, right? The casino aspect, I think it's unfortunate. I mean, this is also why why Bitcoiners are so upset with altcoins and all of these things. Because I think that on a deep psychological level, we all feel that we created this thing, and
they're ruining it.
Well, not just that, but like the thing enabled all of this, right? I mean, if there was no Bitcoin, at least this is my view, like if there was no Bitcoin, there would be no other cryptocurrencies. And I think that's still the case. The Bitcoin acts as a shield for the other cryptocurrencies by its mere existence. Yeah, but yeah, and so we're all kind of like, what the fuck, you know? Yeah, people are using this for penny stocks and Dogecoin and GameStop and all of those things, and we just wanted to make a better financial system. Yeah, and that's what we came here to do. And I mean, we've seen so many examples of this as well, like on a smaller scale, where you know, I mean, I'm from the former Soviet Union originally, and like what happened there after the fall of the Soviet Union, what people got freedom, and what did they do? They started building multi-level scams. Yeah, right. I
Of
think
course.
it is a thing, and that I think there needs to be sort of I don't know, to be honest, because even an education is not always enough, because many people are aware that they're playing in a negative sum game. Yeah, but they still think that, but I might win, right? Same like a lottery. Yeah, you buy a lottery ticket, you know that the expected value of that ticket is going to be less than what you bought it for, right? Yeah, but people still sort of like, but what if, you know? Yeah, I just want to feel what if.
Yeah, of course. And that is a certain value to people. That's the thing that crypto has done more than anything in life. I've always believed in the free market, but crypto has really taught me how it works because I didn't like I made assumptions before, and I think everyone made assumptions. And I think that there's a certain like I have to say it like kind of like the Roger Ver perspective of like this is what people want. This is people want like a cheap payment system that was sound money, all this kind of stuff. But then people want different things. And sometimes it's kind of the same as like the casino thing. What I kind of started to realize is the casino is people want to benefit the most for the least amount of effort. And that's the natural order of the free market that makes things hyper efficient over time, is people try to do that. And one thing I didn't fully appreciate is that for someone who's not living like me, someone who just lives with a regular bank account and card and everything, in most of the developed world, they can buy whatever they want at any time that they want without restriction. Of course, there's a couple things they can't, and if they really like piss off the government, they can't. But for the most part, they have all the freedom they want. But what they don't have freedom to do is make a lot of money. And so the casino thing let people, that was a bigger crushing of freedom that they escaped from. So, which is why they run to that first, because the ability to get, like, you put your money in a savings account, you make a fraction of a percent, and then your money's worth like 10% less at the end of the year anyway because of inflation. But then, what if you, or what if you provide liquidity into Cum Rocket or something and this other thing, all this nonsense, then you just get all this big pot of money that you didn't have. Of course, people are going to go towards that because that's what's there for them, and they didn't have the freedom to do that otherwise.
Yeah, I was listening to, I mean, it also ties into the times we're in on a macroeconomical level. I was listening to some economics podcast. I forget which one it was, but the person had, I think, excellent perspective that it used to be in the world. I mean, if you've seen The Simpsons, for example, it's from the, what, late 80s. It describes the sort of caricature of an American family. But if you look at that family, it's like this half dumb working class guy, right? He has a wife and three kids. The wife doesn't work. He lives in a nice house in a suburb of a small town, you know. So that means that his nuclear power plant job could pay for all of that, and he could have a comfortable life. Whereas, like now, we've gotten to the point where regular people sense that, like, I can't save up to the Homer Simpson life, right? I can't save up to buy a house and so on. And especially like young people with the real estate prices and all of these things, the hidden inflation, that means that people feel like they have to invest, right? Not just that they want to invest, but like, hey, I'm not going to get anywhere unless I become an investor, right? So this attracts all of these people that are not sophisticated investors. To whom normally the advice should be, you know, at best buy index funds. And it attracts them into suddenly, you know, that's why Robinhood and all of these things grew and why crypto has grown, because it attracts them to these things. And then they're trying to, you know, in with different strategies to make it in that world. And I mean, and some of them are even like, what do you call it? Like cynical. Like if you saw the Wall Street Bets era, you would have people that are like, hey, I just leveraged long the 10x on GameStop with my life savings. I know it might go to nothing and I don't care. I just want to stick it to the man and make a statement. But what if it flies, right? And that's like kind of like nihilist even attitude to money and personal finance that I think is sort of created by the not so slow decline of
the fiat scam.
Monetary systems. So in some ways, I think you know, the casino also should blame not just the Bitcoin but also the fiat world that drew it, because there was no Bitcoin involved in making GameStop, and we also need to be aware of that.
Yeah, it also I think it's just when people realize everything's manipulated, the first, I guess, instinct might be, well, can I get some of that manipulation? And then the next instinct might be, how do I have something that's not manipulated? But it's not the first instinct. The first instinct is, I found the world is this way. How do I profit from the way the world is? And the next instinct might be, maybe I should change the world. But it's not the first one.
There's an old American movie called You Can't Con an Honest Man, right? And there's a lot of wisdom in that, right? Because every con involves an element where the one who's getting conned thinks that he is conning somebody, right? And this is why you can't con an honest man. I think we see that quite a bit, you know, with people getting in on things, knowing that, hey, I know this is, come rocket. I know that it's a joke, right? But I think that I'll be able to get out before everybody else, right? And then everybody thinks that they're above average intelligence, right? So they think that I'm
which
going to make it.
Statistically impossible, right?
Statistically impossible. And everybody thinks that I'll be the one that makes it, right? And then we create the whole we're all going to make it meme. Which is also statistically impossible for the same reason.
There have to be some NGMI people as well.
Yeah, nobody wants to get rich slow. They want to get rich fast. Right?
Yeah, that's what thing. Buying the dip is really, right? It's someone lost money on Bitcoin, you know, in order for you to get it.
Yeah, I guess.
So where do you see the mass adoption, I guess the hyper-Bitcoinization kind of thing going? Like, do you think we're close, and how close do you think we are? And do you think it's even going to happen at all?
It's a big question.
Yeah, a few
big
questions.
I don't know. we've been waiting for that for so long now. I mean, it's one of these things that... happens gradually and then suddenly, right? And it's always hard to predict if and when it happens. It's also not necessarily a law of nature that the collapse of a fiat currency or all fiat currencies even would lead to people switching to Bitcoin or to cryptocurrency. It's not a given, I think. Right, because you can still create a new fiat currency, right? That's been happening for as long as there's been crypto fiat currencies, that people just, hey, we start fresh, it's a new one. I mean, just how many currencies actually have new in the currency name, right? The new Israeli shekel, right? Why do we have the new Israeli shekel? What happened to the old Israeli shekel? And so on. I mean, there's a lot of these currencies that are like that. It's hard to tell, to be honest, and I'm the wrong person to ask. I think there's plenty of wise old men that are debating this, and there is wise old men with this opinion or with that opinion, and I don't know. I think our thing is growing, right? All of it is growing. At the end of the day, everything in the crypto space is growing. People are discovering it. People are becoming much more comfortable with it. It's much easier. All of the services are improving. Wallets, options for exchanges, everything is improving. There is demand. I think also non-negligible element to this is that, I mean, the crypto industry itself, sort of just by, employees and its costs and everything, like, it's becoming a meaningful force in the economy. I think we are at the, like, we're a small country now,
Yeah, of course.
that is distributed across the world. And yeah, and people are discovering all the time when life puts them in a situation where, hey, you're in Ukraine and you need to get the fuck out, and the bank is down. Okay, fuck, what do you do? There's a lot of these situations that also convert people. We don't see so much of that in the U.S. right now, but if you look across the world, there's a lot of that, right? And not least in Latin America. So I think that it's one of these things that probably is going to continue growing in a similar way to how it has been growing. I think that the spikes and the dips are going to be less as this thing just becomes bigger. I think that's a good thing. I think that stability is important, and I'm always cheering for Bitcoin to go up slowly.
Yeah, of
Always up,
course.
always slowly is my dream case. We can't always have it exactly like that, but hey, like, now, okay, people are upset for a 10% fall, but I mean, it used to be 40, 50% falls in one day. But now we don't really have that, right? And so now, you don't have to feel like, hey, I'm risking a 50% decline in my wealth overnight. Maybe a 10%, but that's maybe okay. Over time, it's going to go up and so on. So it's hard also to, like, lose track. Sometimes you lose track of the bigger picture when you're so down in the nitty-gritty,
Of
like
course.
figuring out the thing. How do we fix the UI of this little widget? That sometimes it gets. It's important to be reminded, I think, of the big picture of. The freedom, the financial freedom, economic stability, and all of the things that I think brought all of us to this thing.
Yeah, it's something that we have to kind of remind ourselves of every day, and especially when you're f it, one thing I've noticed a lot has been like the crypto Twitter world, which is, it's just the crypto world. It's not only on Twitter, but mostly is very, people say something like one day they say something and then you talk to an average person who doesn't know much about crypto and then they're like, they get excited still. And so sometimes you say like, oh, this is terrible, or what if they activate BIP 1550 or 119 or whatever, it's all over, like all this kind of stuff that's going on. And then or
But
like,
it's a function of how Twitter works,
yes.
right? I mean, things that are controversial create engagement, and then you rise to the top, and which is also why the top influencers are like that, because that's how the algorithm works. And nobody gets retweets for nuanced opinion. You know that. You've posted a couple of nuanced opinions, right? And nobody ever cares,
It's
right?
funny because
I've tried that a bunch of times, where sort of like you post something that is like. Sort of pisses off the Bitcoiners, but not really, but also pisses off some altcoiners and this and that. And it's like, it doesn't get traction. You need to put it in two different separate tweets so that people can use them to dunk on each other to be part of that drama. And if you don't want to be part of that drama, well, then you're not going to make it in the Twitter game.
Yeah.
So,
It's funny because right now, one of my tweets from yesterday is I did some political tweet and I used harsher language than usual. And it just, like, my cousin just messaged me on Instagram. She's like, oh, a friend of mine sent me this. And I was like, oh, shit, that's my cousin. Like, it's like blow it is kind of like blowing up and stuff, even though, like, it's not, I wouldn't say it's my best tweet. Like, I like to give nuance, but, just we're talking about that. Yeah, that's what happens, Or you could be like that Matt Wallace dude and just tweet out Dogecoin and get like 100,000 retweets or whatever, and just keep doing that. It's like,
exactly. I mean, it's gonna go up forever, Laura, right? I mean, the simple messages are the successful ones, and I mean, at the end of the day, people join the community. Keyword is community. They want to feel community. They want to belong. There is the old expression of, there is no zeal like that of the newly converted.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And you see that a lot as well, where people that are new will just parrot stuff that came out of whoever is the leading influencer at the time. It's natural stuff. I don't know how to promote nuance and diversity of thought. It's very unfortunate, I think, and something that is very much missing in the space. And that also makes me less motivated. Like I very rarely check my Bitcoin Twitter anymore. Because it's just like stuff that's going to piss me off, and I don't want to be pissed off, and I don't really care, and so on. And there's so little new stuff either. You know, it's just like a lot of it is, you know, it's always a good exercise to read, you know, the responses to Satoshi's mailing list post where he's like, hey, I built this thing, I call it Bitcoin. Right, and then like first response is that's great, it's never going to scale, and then they have all of these discussions, and like hey, it's basically those things that are still being fought over by people that kind of like you know showed up later and they like came up with this idea on their own, which is an idea that has already been around, they just didn't know about it, and I don't know, it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed that. And it's kind of I guess social media is an allegory for crypto, it's a tool. And I find a lot of people like quit social media or say, I'm not going to use it anymore because it's too toxic, it's too terrible. And what I found I have done sometimes is if sometimes I post something controversial and then a million people get mad at me, I just won't be on Twitter for a few days and I just like never answer people that like yell at me back, and I just move on with my life. And I'm like, I love Twitter now. It's great. Like it's a tool that it can be a happy tool. And it's the same thing with crypto. Like people are like getting wrecked all the time. They're all sad because their portfolio went down. But if you're using it, like I haven't had too many like I've had stressful days working in the space. Right. But as far as the money of it, actually using the crypto, I've had fewer stressful days in the last few years because I've kind of learned to just use it, accept it, and it becomes less of a like the up. It's like if you use it like, oh, I'm gonna like gamble on my savings kind of thing, it becomes stressful, I guess. But then if you use it in a way just living free, it's like, well, I'm still living free, so it's happy.
But so an interesting aspect. So, I mean, when you say use, you mean, you know, things that involve opening your wallet app, right? And that's also what I mean by use. But like when you open your wallet app, like it doesn't give you the feeling of belonging, right? You're not your fucking wallet app, right? It's a tool. It's a thing that I use, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas Twitter is like, it's a belonging. I'm part of this group. And here are the people that I respect and the people that respect me. And here's the other ones. And the heathens must die. Because they favor a small change from right. What's that expression? The controversy of petty difference, right?
Yeah,
the pettier the difference, the bigger the fight.
Of course.
At the end of the day. So, yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's fun that we have this this community in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a lot of friends from the community that I would consider close friends in real life. I mean, there was a time where there was an internet community, right? I mean, I used to go to internet conferences where they would talk about the internet. And that feels silly at this point. I actually still do them. some of those. But it's like, what is that even? And what's an internet company in this day and age? What does that mean? Right. So I guess eventually it's going to get to that. And I think to a large extent it already has. It's also like, I mean, there is a bunch and a bunch and a bunch of people that are using crypto that do not hang out in the community.
That's for sure.
I mean, Coinbase, Binance, all of these services have tens of millions of users, right? You don't see them on Twitter. Where are all these people? But they are, or I guess, I mean, I don't think they can be lying about these things anymore when they're stock listed and do KYC and all their accounts and so on. So we have to assume that there are this many people, and they don't care about the community, same way that you and I don't care about the BitTorrent community, and the drama that goes on there. They just use the thing. And we don't notice because we sort of came in at the time when there was a close-knit little community, and we still, you know, all of our friends are there and our enemies are there, and we hang out there and we do the thing. For many people, I think they just use the thing and they don't hang out in the community. They don't need it, and that's fine. And I mean, we all know a bunch of people like that, right?
Of
That
course.
are Bitcoin or crypto users that, like, you know, don't have a Twitter account, or like they have 8 followers and haven't opened it in 2 years and so
One
on.
friend of mine in
So.
particular, he's also living unbanked off of crypto, but for I guess different reasons, because he doesn't have a birth certificate. He's not like was born without that. He just doesn't exist according to the government. And he's
Cool.
just living his life like great, and he doesn't interact anything with the crypto social world. He just invests, he spends it every day, he re receives it for payments. He's trying to like work on investments to retire because he can't get a bank account to do any of that kind of stuff. He's like just living his life in a much more hardcore. He has the
Isn't
crypto.
that a thing you can solve though? Like to get a, I don't know how America works in that regard, but like,
I
can't you
think.
get a, like, hey, I'm here, I'm a person. Here's a picture of my mom holding me as a baby, something. I
I
don't know.
think you can, but the decision to remain that way is similar to the re reason that I chose to
Right.
live that way. So it's just like at that point, like I'm doing okay. So it's at that point, he probably like has the usage, the total crypto exposure, in terms of like percentage of, net worth as transaction loads, all this kind of stuff of like 100 crypto Twitter people. Like he
Yeah,
probably,
for sure.
but then he's just
For
not there
sure.
at all.
For sure. And he's never read any of the lore and literature out there, right? He doesn't know any of the podcasters, but he knows a lot about how to use a Bitcoin wallet. And again, it is that. And vice versa. You know, like I sometimes bug people at conferences. And it's not a Bitcoin community specific thing. I think it goes in many or most of the crypto communities that you ask someone, like, hey, which brand of wallet do you use? Sort of. And then they tell you, and they're like, okay, but like, when did you last open your wallet? And they'll be like, ah, well, 2 months ago, I bought tickets for this conference. So I had to pay with the wallet, right? So there's a lot of people that, you know, hang out and don't necessarily make transactions. And that's also fine. You know, again, like, we're in a community that is about freedom, right? I think that Bitcoin is a tool so that you can do whatever the fuck you want. And don't let anybody tell you what to do or what not to do. That's kind of my attitude with this. You do what you want, and if you use some of these things, then great. And if you don't, that's also great.
Yeah, and you can pay bills with it too now. That's a
You can
good
pay your
place.
bills with your crypto, yeah.
That's a good place to wrap this whole thing up. Where could people find more about you, your work, what you do, all that stuff?
Yeah, well, I mean, my work for the past many years has been Bitrefill. So just go to bitrefill.com or Bitrefill on Twitter, or my Twitter is at Zygamon. Yeah, I'm sure you'll post a link announcing this. And always happy to hear from users and fans or non-users or people who think I'm an idiot. Whatever, maybe if they're polite about it.
All right, well, fantastic. Well, thanks for being on. Everyone, have a good
Thank you
one.
so much, y'all. Always a pleasure to have this conversation.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and donate to support the show by going to my Cointree page. That's cointr.ee/thedesertlinks, and leave a message with your donation. Check out the show's sponsors. Live on Crypto with Bitrefill. Buy absolutely anything with crypto with Shop and Bit. Avoid content censorship with Odyssey. Protect your privacy online with NordVPN. Get paid to search with Presearch. All links are in the show notes.